Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time, you know, I get these great guests, and I have to go out looking for them and searching for them, but I finally got them back. Our guy, Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Capital Management. Mark Yusko, welcome back to the Bubba Show, buddy.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Always good to be with you.
Well, you know, we got some important things to talk about first, and the first thing is, what the hell happened to Notre Dame football?
I wish I had an answer for you there, I'll tell you. At the end of the day, I think it all just comes down to culture. You know, winning cultures do well, and broken cultures really start to unravel, and I think that's what you saw at Notre Dame this year. Is starts at the top with leadership, and if that's not good, bad things happen. So it's been a tough year.
It's a very tough year, and of course you are obviously a Notre Dame alum and a big fan, and of course I'm a fan as well. I've lived close to him, and it's sorry to see a great program kind of struggle, but it's kind of similar to, you know, what you do for a living as well. I mean, you know, we lead from the top, right? And that's kind of your business, is you lead from the top, and you're on top of the markets, you're on top of investments. And what's your take? What are you seeing in today's general markets? I mean, I know we hear every day, you know, the Trump rally, you know, all the stuff that goes on. But what is a Mark Yusko looking at these days?
Yeah, you know, this has been a really challenging year, to say the least. It's been one of those things where, you know, fundamentally, not a whole lot has changed from the beginning of the year. And, you know, we started off this year the worst first 5 days in the history of markets, right? It's pretty tough start. And, you know, usually the January indicator, so goes January, or as goes January, so goes the rest of the year. You know, that has clearly not been the case. And here we are now, you know, up low double digits, up 10% year to date. Yet when we look at things like, you know, fundamentals of earnings and GDP growth, GDP continues to disappoint. Earnings have been, you know, pretty dismal. Some signs of life here in the most recent quarter, but the first two quarters were just abysmal. So it's been a really tough one. You look around the world, you know, other markets have really struggled. Japan is down. Europe is down. Europe, you know, despite the rally in the U.S. this month, Europe continues to get pounded ahead of this Italian referendum coming up this Sunday, which I think is a big thing that nobody's talking about. Well, but the only bright spot in the world, Todd, has been, you know, the emerging markets. And those were great for 10 months, starting in the third week of January, and they really rallied all year and were up, you know, very nicely up until the election. And now they've sold off half of their gains and are now only up high single digits. So it has been a really difficult and challenging market for investors.
You know, Mark, when I look at things and I look around, and, you know, I'm more of a technical guy, and, you know, I'm a short-term personal trader as a trader, but obviously I'm an investor, and you and I both believe in the art of compounding. In fact, I remember the speech you gave me last time you were on, and I think I use it all the time because it's so important to understand the function of markets. But why do companies that have had very subpar earnings continue to get rewarded for those subpar earnings just because they beat a lowered bar of expectation? What is your take of that when that's happening?
Yeah, you know, I have this funny, well, I think it's funny, maybe other people don't think it's funny, but I think it's funny, tweet that I send out around every earnings season where I say, you know, step one, walk up to bar. Step two, take bar off stand. Step three, put bar on ground. Step four, jump over bar. Step five, claim you're the high jump world champion. And, you know, that's what companies have figured out how to play the game, is you lower guidance, and then you beat. And I'm like, wait a minute, a year ago you told me you were going to make a dollar. Then you lowered it to say, oh, I'm only going to make you know, 10 cents and you make 11 cents and I'm supposed to be happy. Well, I'm not happy. You know, you're down from a dollar a year ago to 11 cents today. That's a negative trend. Yet, you know, the algos will look at that and say, oh, no, they beat by 10%, you know, 11 cents versus 10 cents. And I think that's part of it. I think the second part of it, and this is, I say, this has been a really tough year for the smartest guys in the business. And I mean that absolutely sincerely. I'm not saying it tongue in cheek, because I think the smartest guys in the investment business are in the hedge fund business. In every business I know, you know, the best person charges the most, whether it's a doctor, football coach, basketball player, or hedge fund manager, or investment manager. And so these guys are charging these high fees, and they have just taken it on the chin this year, primarily because of the phenomenon you described. It's on the short side. So, you know, the smartest managers that I know are long, good companies that are making money, that have dominant market share positions, and good technology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the reasons you want to own a company. Those companies have actually underperformed year to date. And the companies that have done well are the companies that have negative earnings, declining trends, horrible business models, declining market share, lots of competition, no monopoly power. And those stocks are up huge. And in fact, you know, since the election, they're up double huge. And it's just a big, giant short squeeze. And we saw this happen in 2000. That's the last time we saw this kind of strange behavior where the worst companies outperform the best companies. And I think it's partly because of algorithmic trading. You know, you sit in the center of high-frequency trading up there in Chicago, and I think it's partly because of that. But I also think it's partly because, you know, there's so much capital looking for a home, and it's tough to find a place to put it today. So you buy what's moving. And what's moving right now is the stuff that is bouncing off the bottom. Some of it probably should have gone bankrupt. But if it didn't go bankrupt, it starts to move. And once that price starts moving, people jump on it.
So the crap of the crap is moving. And, of course, I remember that from the late 90s when I almost went broke because I was short Yahoo, knowing that it never made any money. And it was at $500 a share. And, of course,
let's think about it. Stop for your audience, $500 in 1999. It's materially less than $500 today.
Yes.
And 16 years later.
And we all knew that. I mean, it was an easy call because, but of course, when you get these momentum players, and as you mentioned, some of the algo traders, because they are strictly momentum traders. They're just pushing and pushing and pushing and doing a lot of other things that go on in markets that, you know, I mean, you know, there's things that happen in markets that aren't always the straight up way, but they're legal. So it does push markets one way or the other. And we end up with, you know, a market climbing at a ridiculous pace, or a stock climbing at a ridiculous pace, that it can never meet those numbers. And of course, that goes back, you know, I remember the 87 crash when put options were trading for if the market went to negative. So we know that these things do happen, and I think one of the biggest problems I've found is this ever chase for yield from fixed incomers is becoming a much bigger problem, because as you've just said, there really is not a lot of places to go. And I think when we come back from the break, Mark, I want to know from you, okay, do you think that we're going to find more fixed income? We have seen a rise in interest rates through the bond markets. The Fed hasn't done it yet, but the bond markets are doing what I thought they would do, and telling the Fed to go scratch. And they're starting to push the markets higher. And do you see that as a place that money will start to run if the market does start to correct? So we're going to come back after the break with Mark Yusko, Notre Damer, but a good guy. And also from Morgan Creek Capital Management, and always a good friend of the program, and has always been good to me. So make sure that you listen. He's very sharp, and he'll always tell it like it is. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop by here for a break. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, because we've just hit 280,000 downloads a month. We're trying to get to 300,000. I need your help. Go to libertytalk.fm, The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Capital Management, also a great Notre Dame alum. And also, we're going to talk about this later because he's got a great foundation we want to talk about. But Mark, so we've got this fixed income deal, and you know, obviously, people that are you know near retirement or at retirement, they don't really want to be playing in these in this wild market or the wild wild west as it looks like now. What do they do? What do you see for them coming forward?
Boy, it's the toughest question going right now, which is if you are you know a solid citizen, you worked hard, you saved your money, you didn't go big into debt. You've watched the earnings on your retirement assets, your savings assets, just dwindle to almost nothing. And for short-term deposits, literally is nothing. And I think that is a huge problem. And you know, we've seen this movie before. The problem is the only time we've seen it was in the prelude up to the Great Depression in the 30s. And the reason it happens is, you know, once interest rates start on their, you know, downward spiral, and the government gets addicted to debt in terms of spending, then you have this dilemma in that they can't afford to have higher rates because they can't afford to service their debt. So they, you know, some would say manipulate, some might say guide, however you want to, however extreme you want to be. They'll push interest rates down, and it's a phenomenon called financial repression, and essentially you are forcing investors or savers out of safe assets like fixed income and bonds into riskier assets so that you can keep the price or the cost of those safe assets very low. And you know, that's where we are today. And you know, we find ourselves in a ZERP world, zero interest rate policy world. In fact, at least we're not in Europe or Japan where they have NERP, negative interest rate policy world, where you actually have to pay the bank to keep your money, which is kind of a crazy thought. But there's over, you know, $8 trillion, with a T, dollars worth of bonds out there in the world that have a negative interest rate, meaning you give someone a dollar and they give you back 99 or 98 cents a year later, which just seems absolutely crazy. But, you know, that's where we are. And I think the challenge is post-election, you've had this little, you know, rally in rates, which is actually negative for bonds. So bond prices go down, rates go up, and people think, oh, you know, we're going to have a return to high rates, and I'm finally going to get paid on my savings. But the problem is these things called the killer Ds. And the killer Ds are demographics, debt, and deflation. And demographics is just, you know, what's the working age population? How many people are there age 45 to 65? And when that number is rising, you tend to have positive economic growth. You tend to have, you know, reasonably good interest rates. When that number starts to shrink, you usually have poor growth and lower interest rates. Then the second problem you have is with debt. When you have a low debt to GDP ratio, you know, like when Reagan was president, you know, we had very low debt to GDP. So all the things he wanted to do, like deficit spending and expansionary policy, all made sense because we could incur debt at the government level to prompt infrastructure spending and the like. They're talking about that again now with the president-elect, and it doesn't work. Because at 100% debt to GDP, we don't have the flexibility because, again, the Treasury can't afford higher interest rates on $20 trillion of government debt. So we're at this funny inflection point. And then the last one is deflation. And deflation is what happens when prices fall either because there's excess capacity of something, so just too many goods. You know, if there's too much of something, the price has to go down for the market to clear. And that's the problem we have with just about everything. There's just too much of everything. There's too many tchotchkes. There's too much, you know, oil and gas. There's just too much everything. So prices are falling. And in a deflationary world with high levels of debt and bad demographics, it's going to be really difficult to get high interest rates here. But people keep hoping.
Well, you know, I've had some people tell me that they feel that the 36-year bull market in bonds is over, okay, which means obviously you get higher rates. Bond futures go up, rates go down, and vice versa. And we have seen a little bit of that push. I mean, we've seen the 10-year rally from, you know, like 1.3 at the low to now almost 2.4. We've seen the 30 go back over 3%. Can that continue, in your opinion?
Look, I'm of the view, and I'm a vocal minority on this. I'm of the view that we have not seen the secular low in rates. I think the secular low in rates is still ahead of us sometime in 2020 or 2021. And I get there based on when working age population finally turns back up, when the echo boomers, the children of the baby boomers, start to turn 35. And until then, we're going to see this, you know, slow and steady series of lower lows and lower highs. And it's like a rubber ball bouncing down a set of stairs. Each bounce is higher. That's just kinetic energy. But the end of the trip is a bad place. And you can go back to 2013 and people said, oh, the bull market in bonds is over and rates are going up. And rates hit 4% on the 30-year. And then they went right back down to 2.5%. And then they bounced up to 3%. And then they fell right back down to 2.2%. And you know, now we're at 3%, and people are saying, oh, the rally is over. Well, if you look at the long-term trend, if you look at the demographics, if you look at the amount of debt, and if you look at all the policies, again, that the president-elect is talking about, when you do deficit spending and you increase government spending has a negative multiplier effect. It crowds out private investment and actually slows growth. So that would actually lower interest rates, not increase interest rates. So I think right now what you're seeing is a lot of short covering because there were a lot of people who were short bonds. And, you know, they were worried that, that you know, we were at the end of this great bull market. And I think you've got a lot of, I'm sorry, you got people who are long bonds. And people were long bonds because they were worried about, you know, if Trump were to win, there'd be this massive sell-off and a flight to safety. And so now the people who are short bonds are having a field day because bond prices are actually falling. And we call it risk disparity, where you have all these risk parity funds that got levered long bonds. And they're having to unwind these positions, and that's causing this momentum rally that then all the algorithms in Chicago feed on. And I think that's why you've got this big move in rates here. But when you look at this move relative to the move in 2015 or the move in 2013, it's really not that big. In fact, I tweeted out a picture of it the other day saying, you know, people have been calling for the bottom in interest rates for, you know, the better part of 7 or 8 years. I'm just not sure we're there.
So we've got this obviously interesting conundrum that's going on, and we've got a whole population of unemployed people, and you know, we've got GDP. Now, when I saw that GDP number last quarter, I go, BS, it can't be. That's going to be revised down. And of course, as it turned out to be one big order of soybeans going to China. What is your take of this whole stuff that we see here with GDP and everything? I mean, I think it's antiquated, in my opinion. What's yours?
Oh, I agree with you that measuring GDP is very challenging, particularly in a world full of new technologies and, you know, bits and bytes that get transferred in a nanosecond across the internet. How do you actually measure that? So I do think it's challenging. The one thing I will acknowledge, though, is that the general level and the general direction are important. Because, you know, we still do have manufacturing in this country, and we have manufacturing around the world, and trade still matters. And so, you know, and we do have the non-manufacturing ISM. So we do measure non-manufacturing productivity and growth as well. So I think it's okay, but I'm with you. I think the third quarter number was kind of bogus, and some said it was political to help the election. I don't believe that. I just think, you know, there was this big order of soybeans, and so be it. So it gets counted.
Hold that thought, Mark. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're with Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Capital Management, also a Notre Dame alumni, and the head of the Morgan Creek Foundation. We're going to stop by here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, LibertyTalk.fm. We'll get you the download of the show every single day. In the meantime, The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're coming right back with Mark after the break.
I know where I come from.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mark Yusko, Morgan Creek Capital Management, and also the head of the Morgan Creek Foundation. And Mark, so you were talking about the GDP. Go ahead and finish your thought. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I think, you know, you brought up a great point that the third quarter number looked a little bit bogus, and I would agree with that. I do think that it was more just some funky things that are going on with inventories and the big ag order that you mentioned, not, you know, electioneering politics. I really don't believe that part. You know, whether it gets revised downward or not, you know, we'll see. I do think the fourth quarter number's tracking a little higher than I would have expected as well. And I think what we've got is an inventory cycle challenge here. And I think coming into the new year, I actually get pretty nervous. You know, one of the things that people aren't talking enough about is, every time in the last 100 years we've had a president follow an 8-year term president, they've had a recession in their first year, and you know, it's without fail. And it makes a lot of sense when you think about it, that the person who was in power kind of pulled forward demand to try to win their party to continue. And so if there's an upset victory, a lot of that demand that was pulled forward doesn't show up. It's like all the new cars that people bought this year because they could get 0% financing and no qualifications. They're not going to buy a new car next year. So that pulled forward demand, I think, augurs poorly for GDP next year. So I'm pretty nervous about GDP growth. I think all the talk of 4%, 5%, 6% next year is kind of silly myself. And I think it's going to be a tough year, and then we might even see a recession, kind of like a 2001 style recession, where it wasn't a really horrible one, not a 2007-08 kind, but more of a shallow recession, a profits recession. So we'll see how that goes.
Now, you talk about recession. Now, my opinion is the middle class has never left the recession since 2008, regardless. Am I wrong, yep, or am I right?
No, I think that's a very valid view. And I think the other thing that's challenging, and you mentioned it also, which is the measurement of GDP is a little antiquated. Well, I think also the way the world thinks about markets and how quickly markets move today makes some notions of things like recessions a little bit antiquated, in the sense that, you know, we had not only a recession, but we had a depression in the oil and gas business over the last 18 months. I mean, over $500 billion of capital expenditures have been pulled off the table. You know, that's not recessionary, that's depressionary. And you saw a lot of stocks go down 80-90%. So there's almost this idea of a rolling recession through different segments. You know, we saw it in healthcare when the fears of Hillary's drug pricing reform. So healthcare stocks got killed and healthcare GDP fell off a cliff. You had the challenges with the ACA. So it's almost like we're not going to have a big, broad market correction and a big, broad recession. We're going to have these sector or rolling corrections or rolling recessions industry by industry. It's one way to think about it.
And, of course, a lot of that makes sense. But I think the biggest thing is now I was always a fence sitter on the Federal Reserve. I never was a big fan, but I thought there was a potential for their usefulness. What is your take on the Fed Reserve and what they've done and how they've handled this entire situation?
Yeah, look, I'm kind of a funny person on the Fed. You know, I believe the Fed was created. I actually wrote a letter about this a couple of years ago. I believe the Fed was created in 1913 very simply, which was to preserve the banking cabal. There were six very wealthy families, most of them European, that controlled the banking industry back turn of the century in the United States. You know, back when the United States was an emerging market, you know, over the Thanksgiving holiday, they had Gangs in New York on TV, and I was watching a little bit of it, and people forget how awful it was to live in the United States from 1860 to 1900. And when it was run by the Irish mafia and the Italian mafia. And then we kind of got into a better place in the 20s before the Great Depression, in the 30s after Hoover came in as president, who, by the way, was the last president we elected with no political experience, just if anyone's paying attention to that. I actually wrote a long letter this quarter about, again, for Chicago, your hometown, Ferris Bueller's Day Off as an analogy for the Trump campaign. And I drew a lot of analogies between that. But one of the things here is, if you think about, you know, what's going on in but I lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
We're talking about the Fed. I was bashing the Fed, and I was going to let you either agree or disagree.
So, in 1913, after the Knickerbocker Panic in 1907, so again, the Chicago Cubs won the World Series. They triggered a banking run. No, they actually didn't. And actually, the Cubs won the World Series again this year, so maybe there'll be a banking run this year. But there was a banking run triggered by J.P. Morgan to stop the shadow banking system, these trust companies that were competing with him. And so, you know, they put their competitors out of business, but the banking industry was on its heels. And, you know, Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller, were best friends with J.P. Morgan. His father-in-law was a very powerful senator who introduced this act to create the Federal Reserve. So in 1913 on Jekyll Island, which is kind of funny since Jekyll and Hyde, Jekyll Island, they create the Federal Reserve. And essentially, my view is Federal Reserve basically exists to preserve the banking cabal. And so anytime the banks are on the verge of failure, 1991 SNL, or, you know, recently with the banking crisis in 09, the Fed steps in and bails out the banks. That's what they do. And so everyone wonders why interest rates have been so low for so long. Well, it's very simple. The only people that borrow at Fed funds are banks. And banks basically can borrow for free, and they can buy treasuries for 3% and have a riskless arbitrage. If you lever a 3% riskless arbitrage 10 or 12 times, you can reliquify your balance sheet, which was destroyed when you made crappy loans to, you know, subprime borrowers. So I believe the Fed exists only to help the banks. And the reason they haven't been able to raise rates is because the bank balance sheets weren't ready yet. Now they might finally be ready for a slight increase in rates.
So you're a bankster gangster guy. Okay, so no,
I am a bankster gangster guy.
Me too. I mean, I'm anti. But so when you look at the Fed, and, you know, I mean, in 13, you mentioned 13, Bernanke should have raised rates, and he puked. He couldn't take it. He couldn't take the pressure. But I believe, my personal opinion is, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, and this is Bubba's opinion, not Mark's, but I don't think any of the banks still have enough in reserve for what they're going to lend out. And I think that's a problem. And I think this goes back to debt and other things. And basically, not only does the Fed create money, but so do the banks, because they can lend out at 9-to-1 and they're lending out what they don't have. So I think that's a problem. Any comments?
No, look, you're absolutely right. And again, I'm not agreeing with you just because it's your show. You're absolutely right. The fact is, if the banks were healthy, then Fed funds would be 3 or 4%. For 100 years, the Fed funds rate has equaled nominal GDP. That's what it should equal. And Fed funds today is significantly less than nominal GDP. Why? Because the bank balance sheets are still damaged from the financial crisis. And to your point, if my job as the Federal Reserve is to make sure that the biggest banks, the too big to fail banks, are indeed too big to fail and don't fail, then I've got to do everything I can to keep them, you know, solvent and liquid. Both of those are important and they're different. So look, I think the reason the Fed has not been able to raise for the last 3 years is the banks couldn't handle it. Now, are we on the verge where they finally can? Maybe. But I'm with you that it's a tough call, and you know, maybe she raises 25 basis points in December, but that's effectively not raising rates, if you ask me.
I agree. I think they should be much higher, and again, I think it frees up liquidity. I think that really one of the biggest problems in this country today is that there is really no small business, and everybody's becoming too big to fail because they've wiped out all the little guys. In fact, in my opinion, the big banks try their hardest to wipe out the little banks as well. Because it creates more for them, and they have a tremendous advantage, because when the regulators come into them and say, hey, you're doing this wrong, and they basically say, well, too bad, we'll pay our fine and move on, I believe that becomes a bigger problem in the long position of where we are, and I think it's really done a lot of damage to competition, to, you know, what happened to American quality, to making things better and giving people the best deal, making them want to come to be with your bank or with your business. And I think that this whole stuff with the monopoly type stuff, you know, you've got Comcast and AT&T that don't go into the same market, so there's no competition. You had Walgreens trying to buy Rite Aid. That deal got swelled up. You had the Monsanto-Bayer deal. I mean, again, I think that we need competition. I think the world needs to be a competitive balance because it makes products better. It creates more jobs. It creates more money flow, more velocity of money. But when they do what they do, they really put us in a bad shape. And I don't know, I talk too much, but this is Mark Yusko, Morgan Creek Capital Management, also head of the Morgan Creek Foundation, which we're going to talk about when we come back from the break. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, LibertyTalk.fm. We'll get you the download of The Bubba Show, as well as The Sporting Edge, where we do cover Notre Dame on the weekends. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop by every break and come back and finish up with our guy, Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Capital Management. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Mark Yusko, Morgan Creek Capital Management, but more importantly, also the Morgan Creek Foundation. And Mark, I know you've spent this, I think, since 2005. You put this foundation together, and I know you do a lot of great things in the area where you're at, but I know you do a lot of great things all over. And tell us about the foundation.
Yeah, so you know, one of the things that is important to us at Morgan Creek, and you know, we borrowed this idea from my mentor, Julian Robertson, when Julian set up Tiger Management, and he set up the Tiger Foundation. And essentially what it is, it's a foundation that takes a portion of the profits of the company and then has everyone in the company get involved in terms of identifying charities and identifying things that you want to work on within that charitable mandate. So we set up Morgan Creek Foundation back when we launched Morgan Creek back in 2004-05, and we take 10% of our profits, we put it in there, and then everybody here gets a chance to work on something that they have passion for. Now, we do restrict it to education, so that's pretty broad, but our thing is education, and that's everything from early childhood education to, you know, adult education or college and high school education. But, you know, we're involved about 30 organizations actually around the world, because we've got an office in Shanghai, so we've done some fun stuff over in China as well, but primarily in the communities in which we live, so Chapel Hill, North Carolina, up in New York, where we've got a handful of people, and then we've got some lone wolf players around the country that work out of their homes. So, but you know, we believe in education. We think it's how you break the cycle of poverty. We think it's incredibly important for all the things you were talking about just a minute ago, in terms of small business and what creates real growth in our economy. So, just something we believe in, and really we're inspired by others before us to, you know, give a little bit back from some of the gifts we've been given.
Well, that's great, and it's great to have you on because of that. Now, you know, I'm a big believer in education as well. I actually have a high school financial literacy program, which I'm now in 177 high school, which I financed by myself. But what I look at now, and I think that many of us are very uneducated when it comes to their money. And I know you do a tremendous job at watching over your clients' money and moving it around to where you think it should be. And one of the things that bothers me the most, Mark, is that, you know, you read a lot of this fear-mongering stuff out there, and everybody's always, well, you know, buy gold, and now we've got these commercials, you know, buy gold with all of your IRA. And I listen, I think everybody should own a small percentage of other assets. I mean, I think diversification is very important. But I would never buy gold because I thought the market was going to collapse. I would buy gold because I thought it was a good investment and maybe a mark against currency. But I do think it's an investment. What are your thoughts on that type of thing?
Look, I could not agree more on the challenges of fear-mongering and you know, trying to sell based on that fear. And you see all kinds of ads for everything from, you know, guaranteed investment contracts to gold and silver and other forms of get-rich-quick schemes preying on that fear. And I think it's tragic. And, you know, one of the things, not to get on a too big a soapbox here, but
get on a real high one.
One of the things that I really find troubling is this whole idea of 401ks. You know, the average person is living their life, they're working their job, they're taking care of their family, they have no time, expertise, or knowledge of financial matters to manage their own capital. You know, in the old days, your retirement was in a defined benefit plan. You put your money in, the company hired professional managers to take care of the money, and you were paid a certain benefit on your retirement, irregardless of what happened to the money. And if the professional manager did a bad job, the company was on the hook. Now, today, they've transferred that liability to individuals. And so an individual, like my daughter, who's working nights as a pediatric oncology nurse, is supposed to somehow be also managing her 401k. She's not a business person. She's not an investment person. She's a wonderful person, and she's very smart. But her expertise is not investing in finance. It's, you know, pediatric oncology medicines. So I think the whole movement is wrong, and I think we should be back to a system where professionals manage money on behalf of investors. We could still have them be portable. We could still have it be in a defined, you know, benefit type format, but it would be individually based and portable. We have the technology to do that. But the mutual fund lobby is very strong. They like the fact that all the money goes into mutual funds and some of it goes into places like gold and gold ETFs because they get paid and they don't have to worry about what the returns are because they're taking their fee. So the long thing that we probably don't have time to talk about today, but it is something that I do feel strongly about, that, you know, diversification is important, and having a disciplined process for rebalancing your portfolio and not giving into the fear and not putting it all in gold and not putting it all in cash and not putting it all in fixed income and not putting it all in stocks, but having a broad-based, global, systematic approach to investing is critically important, because the average person has a 40, 50, 60, 70-year time horizon over their life of these funds. And to think that they can look at it day to day and make an impact just doesn't make any sense.
And, we agree. And of course, we got a couple of minutes left, but I just want to talk about the election a little bit and the new president. It doesn't matter who you voted for. I mean, I was a Trump guy. I predicted he was going to win. And I took 4-1 odds that he was going to win. But at the end of the day, I like him because he's a business guy, not a politician. I think that I believe he's going to be a one-term president. I think he just wants to try to turn things around. That's my opinion. But his plans that he's putting in place are all great. Okay. I mean, so far, I haven't seen anything that I don't like. I think that, taking down a lot of these regulations, which have really hurt guys like you, as a matter of fact, because of all the regs that go on involved in your business. But at the end of it, even if he gets it all done, and even if it works, the market has gotten so far ahead of where we should be, because even if he gets these things done, what are we, a year away from seeing them actually the fruits of the labor? And we've still got what you opened up with is the major debt problem and the other things in this country. So, I mean, they're good plans, but aren't we just so far ahead of the curve right now that something needs to resolve itself?
Oh, yeah. Look, valuations are very, very high, on the order of magnitude of 2 standard deviations above fair value. And we think the market's very, very dangerous here. But look, people want to believe that all these good ideas, and there are many good ideas that have been bandied about, reducing regulation, clearly a good idea. Investing some money in infrastructure, clearly a good idea. Now, incurring a bunch of debt to do it, that's not such a good idea. If they were to do a one-time tax holiday for this offshore money, this $3+ trillion is offshore, and say, we'll reduce your taxes to a 30% instead of 40% if you bring it back. Yeah, that's a good idea, because you could raise $1 trillion for infrastructure and not incur any debt. So there are some things that you could do that are quite important. The problem is, to your point, it's going to take at least a year before any of that money finds its way into the economy. We're not going to get this magical growth boom next year. And stocks have moved so far, so fast. I mean, small cap stocks up 16% since the election. Some infrastructure stocks up 25, 30, 40, 50% since the election. That's the result of algorithms. It's the result of short squeezes. It's the result of non-fundamental behavior. And there will be a pause that refreshes. My hope is that we're not like 1928-29. 1928, we had a Republican sweep. We had a president who had never had elected office. He didn't really understand the nuances of politics. When he got there, things didn't go as quickly as he thought. The market had rallied 20% from November 28 to the peak in September 29. The market started to crash, and everybody panicked. And instead of doing the smart things, they did dumb things, like they put up the Smoot-Hawley tariff bill, and they increased taxes, and they tried to export 500,000 Mexicans.
Mark Yusko, Morgan Creek Capital Management, thank you so much for being a part of the show today. I always appreciate it, and you always bring great, refreshing ideas to us. Thank you so much.
No, great to be with you, and thanks for leading the conversation down all the great paths, as you always do.
This is Mark Yusko, and this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Remember, libertytalk.fm, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be back tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.